Even as Bonnegrand's courier departed Pridetown, a second messenger arrived in Delaval City. This one from Laird Milwellis.
The riddle of Dame Guaita's elusiveness is solved, my king. The Laird of Palmaristown has discovered her immoral treachery, wasting the souls of spirit, walking monks, as she flees, ever flees, in fear of him.
And what does this mean?
The glorious Laird of Palmaristown will have her now, in short order, and the Northland will be secured. We have her! Now that we know her tactics, we have tricked her into a grave mistake. She believes that we have left our flag exposed, and so she runs to our south and west, toward this very city. She intends to pass Laird Milwellis by in a swift glide and then turn north to try to strike Palmaristown, for she has not the strength of forces to do battle with Laird Milwellis, and surely not to threaten the high walls of Delaval City.
So Laird Milwellis will turn and catch her at last. It has taken far too long to be rid of the inconvenience that is Guaidra.
She is fleet, and though we will use her secret sight against her, we cannot fully blind her.
What does that mean?
Catching her will be no easy task for one large force, and Laird Milwellis does not wish to split his legion too thin against a dangerous enemy.
You claimed that you had her.
We do, my king. When you come forth?
Wearing a perplexed expression, Yezelnik had no response.
Come forth in all your glory, a straight march along the course described. She is trapped, and she passes likely this very day. Laird Milwellis will turn his force and lengthen his line north and east of her. When you come forth, so too will the western route be blocked. To the south lie Pridetown and Laird Barnegrin. Dame Guaidra has nowhere to run.
Oh, glory to King Yezelnik.
Yezelnik turned to regard his plump wife.
This is your moment, my beloved champion. Guaidra will be ensnared before all of Delaval's power with nowhere to run. She will surrender or be slaughtered to a warrior, and word of your victory will spread throughout the kingdom, and none will dare oppose you.
Cannot Milwellis finish this witch?
Be well, my love. If all glory is to Milwellis, will he claim more for Palmaristown and for himself? He is your general. Do not make of him a king.
Prepare the legions!
Separate holdings once more? That is your message to King Yezelnik and Milwellis and Ethelbert Dorsentil?
Branson still held conference with Bonnegrand and Riandu.
Fewer and greater holdings.
Independent kingdoms for Yezelnik, for the Laird of Ethelbert Dorsentil, for Guaidra, and for Milwellis?
Bound by the common church of Blessed Abel.
Bound only by gamesmanship and fear of alliance. And as it sorts, who will march first and against who? This is no end to war, but merely a pause as each king decides which rival he might most easily topple.
King Yezelnik will never accept it.
Then why would you propose such nonsense?
Because Laird Milwellis is an ambitious man, and Laird Ethelbert, or his successor now, a nervous one.
You seek to drive a wedge between Milwellis and Yezelnik. Do you expect to prompt Milwellis to treason, or just to force Yezelnik to see him and you in a new and threatening light?
Either would serve.
Then you do not expect your proposal to prove acceptable.
Of course not.
But why?
Bonnegrand stared at him as if the answer should be obvious, and indeed it was. But Branson wanted to hear it aloud.
Dame Guaidra has already begun her run. I doubt I could be by her side in time to turn her away from this course as she has chosen, as Milwellis will be quick to cut off her escape.
You should have informed me of her run before it began.
We had no time. Milwellis had our advantage revealed. And were we to delay, he would have come to suspect that we knew of his revelation, and he would become suspicious of our every movement. I could turn her south, perhaps, that she could run through Pride Holding and out to the open south ahead of Milwellis and Yezelnik.
You believe that Yezelnik will come forth from Delaval City?
Milwellis knows that he cannot catch us alone. The bait is clear and the hook disguised.
Bonnegrand looked to Riandu, then stared off into the distance, plotting.
You quickly travel great distances with Dame Guaidra.
A trick of gemstone magic and my Jester 2 training.
Can you catch up to Riandu's monk on the north road?
Brother Castingay, he left this morning.
I believe I can with ease.
Can you deliver him quickly to Moelis's camp?
Branson, his expression curious, did not respond.
Do so. And tell Brother Castingay to inform Laird Moelis that King Yezelnik has received the same offer, and that I expect the king will accept, though he will surely recall all his legions from both Moelis and Bonnegrand.
Branson puzzled, but starting to figure it out, looked to Riandu.
Brother Castingay is traveling openly along the road.
And when I have done this, would you have me return to you, to Guaidra, to turn her south to Pridetown?
That option always remains, but not yet. Return to me in time, but first scout well the road to Delaval City. Let us see if Yeznik comes forth till Mewellus's call. Let us learn if he has the belly for a fight.
And what will Bonagran do?
I will decide where I want to win the war.
Delaval City had not seen so grand a procession in the memory of anyone alive. Every rank, every line marched in perfect harmony, boots stomping the cobblestones in cadence. A legion of foot soldiers led the way, 20 abreast and 300 deep. Then came the elite cavalry, in shining bronze, horses and riders armored, spear tips gleaming in the morning sun. The rolling thunder of the chariots followed, their ranks separated by a line of gilded coaches, the king himself in the most decorated one of all. He sat atop its roof on a throne glittering with gold leaf, occasionally tipping his hand in recognition of the thousands who lined the wide street to bid him farewell. From the high balcony of Castle Delaval, Queen Olim watched them all go, and Yezalik made sure to acknowledge her. Behind the king and the coaches of his entourage came the rest of the chariots, and behind them three more legions of footmen, their long lines interspersed with an endless stream of wagons full of salted fish and other supplies. By the time the last of Yezalnik's army passed through the city gates, the sun was low in the west, and the king was long out of sight of the city, miles along the road. As soon as he had crossed under the gates, Yezalnik had retreated inside his armored coach, and his personal guards, several score of veteran warriors, stayed close to him in the march and formed an iron ring about him in the encampment that night. His day of final victory was at hand, and he would take no chances. Despite the many sentries, though, he was truly a lonely man. He missed his wife terribly. She had been his strength these last weeks, prodding him on to greater heights of glory, rewarding him for his courage with memorable nights of lovemaking. This was the first time they had been apart in months, the king realized, as he settled into sleep and found that he could not. She was his only friend. That unsettling thought made him frown. He recalled his uncle's court. Laird Delaval had surrounded himself with trusted and loyal warriors, with men and women he called his friends. Not so for Yezalnik. His two primary generals, Milwellis and Bonagran, were lairds of their respective holdings. Should he bring them to Delaval City? Garrison Commander Bonagran, perhaps?
No, Milwellis.
Bonagran was too old and surly to share in the benefits Yezalnik might know as uncontested King of Haunts. For all of his love for Olim, the thought of the pleasures of many pretty young ladies was not unpleasant. Yes, when this business with Dame Gwydra was finished, he would invite Milwellis to Delaval City as his chief advisor, as his garrison commander, and as his friend. He wanted a friend, many friends, he decided. He would gather a court of nobles, young and randy, and together they would enjoy the pleasures of a bevy of young and pretty ladies. An image of a scowling Olim rattled his senses, but King Yezalnik shook that away. He was the King of Haunts. His every desire would be met, and by whomever he chose, Olim would have to accept that. He was the King of Haunts. But he was a lonely man.
That was most amazing, Highwayman.
Brother Castengay and Branson had ended their bounding run, the vast encampment of Laird Milwellis in clear sight in the valley below.
Would that Master Rayandur had afforded me a malachite, that I might attempt such a prance back to Pridetown when my duties here are finished.
We would not have Milwellis and Father de Gilb learning of this property of the gemstone. You know your duty here?
Brother Castengay held up the rolled parchment, sealed and waxed with a crest of pride.
And King Yezalnik will accept the proposal of Laird Bonagran.
Branson nodded, though he still wasn't quite certain of Bonagran's intent here, or of how it might unfold.
Am I to remain with Laird Mewellis, or return to Pride?
Be away from this camp as soon as you are able. The next week will be filled with battle and death. Follow the stench of rotting bodies if you choose to join in, or find a small village nearby to house you through the chaos. But do not stay with Milwellis unless your heart is for Father de Gilb, and unless you have the call to do battle with your own brethren of Pride.
Do you believe that Laird Milwellis will war with Laird Bonagran?
Branson just smiled and shrugged. He wasn't sure, but he hoped that it would come to that. King Yezalnik sat atop his coach, tapping his fingers on the oaken arms of his gilded throne. On the ground before him stood Captain Descartes of the 7th Legion, one of the battle groups Yezelnik had granted to Bonnegran. Beside the king stood a nobleman of his court, an advisor who had read the note from Laird Bonnegran, and atop the nearby wagon to Yezelnik's right sat Queen Olin, arrived at last from the city.
Did you not hear that, my queen? An end to the war, so says Bonnegran. This man, you think so grand a champion. We simply stop. How marvelous! And since my victory is at hand, assuredly now is the time for me to divide my kingdom among several smaller kingdoms. Oh my! But how wonderful with Bonnegran getting his own!
Alas, but he has seen too much of the war. I have heard of such things where mighty warriors become cowardly. It is a great loss, but no matter. For our kingdom is at hand. Indeed, my husband, perhaps it is better that a once mighty laird so nearby to Delaval City has lost his loins for the fight.
King Yezelnik fixed his stare back on Captain Descartes.
You would have me return to Laird Bonnegran and tell him that his offer is refused?
Oh, more than that. I would have you go to Pride, take extra horses and ride through the night, and tell my subject of the situation. Dame Gwydra and her pitiful forces flee straight at my army, trapped north and west by the great General Mirwellis, and with Bonnegran and the thousands I gave him blocking her way to the south. Tell him to come forth and join in Gwydra's slaughter, or I will remove him from the seat of pride and disgrace. Perhaps he can yet salvage a place among my generals. Perhaps I'll even allow him to join me in the rout of Laird Ethelbert. But I'll not tolerate his hesitance. Not now. Go!
An interesting proposal.
Mirwellis didn't immediately respond, considering more carefully the implications of Bonnegran's curious and unexpected ploy. Surely Yezelnik would be outraged, particularly at this moment, with one of his prime enemies about to be utterly destroyed.
We must move more quickly. I would catch and destroy Gwydra even before she encounters the Delaval garrison, if that is possible.
Harcourt looked at him curiously, obviously expecting more.
And since Bonnegran will not likely come forth...
All glory to Palmaris Town!
And who better to absorb the holding of Vanguard than Mirwellis of Palmaris Town, with our ships dominating the Gulf and securing the trade routes?
Bonnegran's hesitance plays for us. Might he even evoke war between Delaval City and Pride Town?
A marvelous possibility. But one stride forward at a time, my friend. Let us crush Gwydra, and quickly, that none share in our glory. Then we will let King Yezelnik determine our course, be it to Chapel Abel, or even to distant Ethelbert Dosentel. I will be the good and loyal prince, while Bonnegran pauses to irrelevance. An interesting proposal.
This will be the field of battle.
Dame Gwydra stood on a ridge, looking east across a descending slope to a wide field interspersed with small copses of maples and elms.
Blendon Co., there have been other notable battles here.
I had thought we would find higher ground, more rocky and defensible.
So had Gwydra, but the choice had been forced by the proximity of King Yezelnik's forces in the other direction. She looked that way as she considered the Laird of Pride, and her turn did not go unnoticed.
If he does not come...
Then we flee to him. He will not stop our run.
Bonnegran will come. He goaded Mirwellis forward with a message and gave King Yezelnik pause. That was his intent, and only because he would have us fight them separately.
Gwydra and Branson turned Dawson's way.
There's no telling what a man like that'll do when his world's on the line. He's all a friend to you when you visit, to be sure. But how might that friendship hold when 50,000 warriors are chasing you to his town?
This is not about us. We are here for the people of Hants and the misery they will surely know if we desert them to the whims of King Yezelnik.
This will be the field of battle. Prepare it quickly, for Mirwellis will come on eagerly and will not pause to wait for King Yezelnik. All glory to him, he believes, and Yezelnik is a day's march away at the least.
The rise is for me and my brethren to defend.
Their horsemen will break into a charge at the base, no doubt.
And that is the time to hit them the hardest.
Penaur scurried away.
What else? This is not the type of battle we fight in Vanguard. Rarely do armies there number in the hundreds. And here we face thousands with thousands.
Branson looked around at the landscape, picturing the battle in his head, playing it out as a bird might witness it.
Logs.
Logs?
Word traveled fast along King Yezelnik's line. Dame Gwydra had stopped and turned to face Mirwellis before the jaws of their trap could engulf her.
Faster then! I would see that blood!
Drive on! Where is Bonnegran? Bid him come forth. There can be no escape for the Witch of Vanguard.
Within an hour, King Yezelnik had his answer, for across the wide fields to the south appeared an army more than half the size of his own and flying the wolf-emblazoned pennants of Pride Town.
Gwydra's End!
Yezelnik flailed his fist into the air, overwhelmed with joy. Where could she go, caught between three forces, each far superior to her own? Soon after, a contingent of heavy war chariots rumbled across the fields, and Vonnegran stepped down before Yezelnik.
I feared I would have to ride all the way to Pride Town to pry you from your hole.
I sent you a courier, an offer, 5 holdings, and an end to the war.
The war ends this day. Dame Gwydra will fall to the Laird Muellis right before our eyes, and to our blades as well, if we do not tarry.
Even were that so, it would only preface a continuing war.
Ethelbert?
And the brothers of Abel and Vanguard itself, and—
What do you say?
I have your answer.
My answer?
I ask you one more time. Abandon this war and divide Haunts accordingly.
Haunts is mine. Mine! From Delaval to Ethelbert Dosental, from the Belt and Buckle to the Forest of Vanguard, mine! How dare you? Haunts is mine!
We shall see.
On Bonnegran's nod, his practiced brigade whipped their teams into a gallop and rumbling turn.
What? Treason! Stop them!
And, indeed, some of the king's men moved to do just that.
You there! Surrender now! You and your men surrender, I say!
The Laird of Pride lifted a spear from the bucket at his feet and aimed at the commander. The spear plunged through the commander's chest and drove behind him to the ground, pinning him in place. With Bonnegran at their tip, the wedge of his skilled charioteers thundered through the scattering ranks of confused Delaval soldiers.
The king? Fight them! Kill them!
Yezelnik leaped from his throne and scrambled down the ladder at the side of his coach, disappearing inside and slamming the armored door behind him. The commanders scattered to their respective battle groups, turning the lines, readying the archers, and forming defensive squares as the fields to the south blackened with lines of warriors marching under the flag of Pride, not Delaval. Then charged without hesitation to the command of the Bear of Haunts. The ground shook when they came on, driving into King Yezelnik's flank, led by Bonnegran and his devastating wedge of veteran charioteers. The sky blackened with arrows, the field reddened with blood. There was no shortage of second-guessing on the ridge west of the low field known as Blendin Coe, when all the higher ground north and east darkened with the soldiers of Laird Muellis. Those enemies in the north held their ground, planting their long spears in the turf and standing at ease, while in the west, the great force began to move, spilling down the northern slope into the bowl of Blendin Coe, forming into squares.
How many to each?
500. 1,000?
Beware the line in the north.
The ground up there is difficult, and we've archers and monks ready to sting them if they try to run about us.
Fittingly, the sky darkened as storm clouds rushed on brisk late summer winds and stole the late morning sun.
If we sting them hard enough, be prepared to break and run to the south and Pride Town.
If Bonnegran won't come to us, we'll go to him.
Milwellis's leading squares were halfway across the mile-long field by that point.
Come on, then!
Dawson glanced back over his shoulder at the second contingency, and he noted a rider fast approaching along the western road. Dawson tapped Gwydra's shoulder, and when she turned to regard him, he motioned to the distant man. Both were still looking on curiously back to the west when the storm broke in the east, the leading three squares coming on with a charge.
Let fly! Let fly!
Lines of vanguardsmen bent their bows and sent their killing darts into the air, but the shield wall stopped most of that with only minimal damage. Behind the leading squares, groups of Palmaris Town archers rushed into place and tried to return the volley, but from the lower ground they couldn't yet reach Gwydra's position. Seeing that as their enemy's only advantage, Milwellis's commanders urged those first squares on faster. Up the slope they charged, and a second storm broke. A thunderstorm, and not from the skies above, but from the ground before them, as the brothers of St. Mirabel popped up from their concealment and blasted Milwellis's ranks with stunning bolts of graphite lightning.
Let fly! Let fly!
The archers continued their bombardment. The highwaymen bounded among the fleeing monks, helping brothers to their feet and shoving them along their way. Still, arrows chased those monks up the hill, and several brothers fell to the ground. Farther below, the second rank of squares methodically marched past the retreating first groups, continuing up the hills.
They're not all up!
Dawson turned to Gwydra, shaking his head.
Now or not at all! And sure if not at all, then we're all lost!
Dame Gwydra closed her eyes and tried to steady herself. She thought herself a fool for continuing her march. She should have returned to St. Mirabel, or to Vanguard.
Come along and ride hard!
Milwellis, Harcourt, and Father de Gilb watched the second rank of squares ascend the hill, victory all but assured.
I wish to be there when Dame Gwydra begs for her life.
The two were just about to kick their mounts into a run when over the crest of the far western ridge came a curious sight. Several burning logs in a long line. At either end of each stood runners holding ropes affixed to those clever barriers. These runners didn't hesitate and didn't slow, charging down at the marching enemies, pulling the logs between them. With their fires raging along their oil-soaked lengths, those logs gained momentum and outran their pullers, bouncing and rolling down the hill. How the soldiers of Milwellis scattered before that conflagration. Running beside that third wave of rolling firebombs came the Brothers of Abel, once again, gemstones in hand.
The beasts, onward!
Harcourt grabbed Milwellis's mount's bridle and held the laird back.
Swashbuckler's flash!
Harcourt referred to a sea term to describe the technique of a particular type of swordsman, who used exaggerated movements and flair to disguise often ineffectual maneuvers.
Be at ease, laird. Their display is far more impressive in appearance than effect, I'm sure.
So they waited and watched, and Gwydra's forces pressed from the top half of the ridge with volleys of arrows and magical explosions. But as Harcourt had predicted, nothing dramatic changed in the greater scheme of things. Gwydra's ploy had killed many of Milwellis's men, a couple of hundred perhaps. But the swarm of the Laird's army continued their indomitable march, and even those shattered formations worked fast to regroup and begin again the press.
Swashbuckler's flash. How many more tricks might Dame Gwydra have to play?
Not enough.
His actions toward strengthening the loyalty of his soldiers, particularly those given to him by the very king they now battled against, had worked handsomely, but these were seasoned Delaval soldiers opposing them, in superior numbers, and Yezelnik's men did not break and run. And so Bonnegran and his charioteers had to be everywhere at once, omnipresent on the battlefield, thundering in wherever the line of pride seemed most shaky and vulnerable. None could withstand those powerful charioteers and their godlike leader. None dared remain on the field before the Bear of Haunts. In the height of the fighting, with men dying by the score, horns began to blow and every warrior, Delaval and Pride alike, turned to see a new force entering the fray, charging hard from the northeast.
Milwellis has come! Milwellis has come!
With a cry, the foppish king dared come forth and climb again to the roof of his carriage. His smile nearly took in his large ears as he peered to the northwest to see a great legion rushing in, sure to slam against Bonnegran's exposed flank.
They will split our enemy asunder! Even the great Bonnegran cannot hold his line together! Swiftly will come the end of Bonnegran!
Death to the Bear of Haunts! Milwellis has come! And so you die, Bonnegran the traitor!
The force closed, and King Yezelnik hopped about with glee and such relief. But gradually came questioning remarks from Yezelnik's commanders.
Light horses! Milwellis is armored!
King Yezelnik's smile dissolved as he looked around at the gathering, some commanders in trees, others atop wagons, and all peering intently to the northwest.
Laird Milwellis was wise enough to lighten a force to come to our cause.
It is not Laird Milwellis, my king!
It is Laird Ethelbert! He has come forth in all his power!
The blood drained from Yezelnik's thin face. He turned fast to look to his wife for support, to the woman who had given him such courage and daring in these last months. But she stood staring wide-eyed, her hands up before her gaping mouth. She retreated fast again to the sanctuary of her armored coach. Yezelnik looked back to the approaching force.
Friend or foe?
The identity of the new force entering the field of battle had become clear. Bonnegran looked at his fellow chariot drivers.
The men of Ethelbert Dos Entel hate Yazelnik.
They hate Laird Bannergran too. Follow!
Bannergran swung his chariot around and charged away from the raging battle, straight toward Laird Ethelbert's approaching line. He lifted his great axe high above his head as he came in clear sight of the group and began waving for them to turn north, a course that would veer them from Bannergran's flank and toward the approaching eastern edge of Yazelnik's force. Kieran Howen appeared, astride his charger and surrounded by his trusted generals. He lifted his sword in salute to Bannergran and turned his force to the north as directed. It occurred to Bannergran then that this Dame Gwydra was a most remarkable diplomat, and a highwayman too, though it pained him to admit it. Bannergran, who wasted no time in reversing his direction, and now with unexpected allies ready to turn the tide of battle, the Bear of Hants drove even more furiously back into King Yezelnik's ranks. East of that press, Ethelbert's charge overwhelmed the spur of Yezelnik's line.
Oh, the treachery!
Go forth, my king! Now is the time when great men may recapture the press of battle!
What?
Our lines are breaking. The peasants are confused by the betrayal of Bannergran and the arrival of this new and furious enemy. They need to see you riding among them, rallying them back to the cause of King Yezelnik.
Your presence will strengthen them and turn them back to the battle.
And we will win?
The three commanders looked to each other.
Or we will die in glory!
Oh! My wife is here on the field of death!
The queen to Delaval City!
The men began hustling all about, putting fresh horses to Queen Olam's wagon and ordering an escort for the desperate run.
Now, my king! Our lines are falling and it's time to ride forth!
Behind him came a stableman pulling Yezelnik's armored white charger, the horse he had typically ridden onto the battlefields after the fight had ended.
No, not here.
Many sets of eyes settled on him.
No, behind our walls. The high and thick walls. Yes, yes. To Delaval City we go, all of us. We will regroup and hold these traitors at bay, and Laird Milwellis will come in from behind and crush them against our walls.
His great enthusiasm was not met in kind, not from the commanders and not from Olam, who stared at him hard from the next wagon over. How many times had poor Yezelnik seen that look?
Go and save the day!
Shut up, woman! To Delaval City! Turn about and flee!
My king, if we do so, we will be routed, surely. Half our men will die on this field or scatter to the corners of Hants, and less than a quarter will ever return to the city!
Go! Go! Time to run, lady.
Dame Gwydra reflexively glanced to the south, as if she expected a great army led by Bannergran marching to her aid. But there was nothing, and she turned back to Dawson and resignedly nodded.
Dame Gwydra, hold!
The shouts from Brother Pinauer turned them both around, and they saw the monk running toward them and escorting a pair of riders, Cormac and Milkayla.
Bannergran has come forth! He battles King Yezelnik down the western road!
There's our course! We'll get to him, and we'll fight them all!
How fares he? We know not.
We were sent straight away before the fight was joined. But joined it was, for we heard the first ring of battles as we rode hard to find you.
Then let us be gone, and quickly. Perhaps the outcome is not yet decided.
No.
Branson walked over to the group.
Not yet. We have not hurt Milwellis enough. If we retreat to Bannergran, so too follows Milwellis. And with Yezelnik's thousands bolstered by this massive force before us, our loss will be complete.
Then what would you have me do?
I would have you tell me that this war is worth all the misery. I would have you promise me that your ascent is worth the price of so many innocent lives and the agony so many families will know when this day is done.
Branson, what would you have me say? How might I weigh the price of such misery?
By promising me that Queen Gwydra of Hants will be as Dame Gwydra of Vanguard. You will care for them, all of them, throughout your reign. You will make their lives better, subjects of every remote corner of this land. You will end those miserable wars and seek peace among the lairds and among the kingdoms.
You're rambling, boy!
No! No, I will hear it. I must believe it. I must know it before...
Before?
I have killed so many men and women this day. Common folk who did not deserve to die. Men and women who are here because they were given no chance in the matter to fight for a cause they neither understand nor endorse. Whether the misplaced raids of Palmaris Town warriors or the helpless victims of Yezelnik's press gangs, they do not fight to support the cause of an evil king. Nay, they fight because if they did not, they would be put to the stake.
It's the nature of things.
No more! Promise me! We will win this day here and now, and many, many will die. But only if Dame Gwydra is who I have come to trust her to be.
Gwydra stared at Branson, hard at first, but then her visage softening as she reached up to gently stroke his young and innocent face.
I am. For myself, I seek nothing. For Hans, I seek everything.
And is it worth the pain and the misery?
Who can know, Branson? But surely it is a better outcome by far than that of a crowned King Yeselnik.
I need more than that.
The hand is played, the ugly hand. But there is a difference in victory or defeat, a profound difference for all the folk of Hans.
Promise me.
I promise.
For Kaedale.
I promise.
Branson stepped back. He turned to all of them.
Do not flee. You will know when your victory is at hand.
Branson moved away, leaving Dawson, Pinauer, Cormac, and Milkayla staring at each other incredulously. And both Pinauer and Dawson lifted their open palms helplessly, completely befuddled.
What's it about?
The woman turned and faced Blendon Coe, where Milwellis's forces dangerously neared, three intact squares already moving steadily up the rise, with nothing substantial to oppose them, no tricks, and not nearly enough forces.
About honor and decency, and the demands of conscience, and the strength of sacrifice.
Branson looked down on Blendon Coe. He thought of Afwin Wee then, strangely. What secrets had she learned from her time in the Walk of Clouds among the Jester too? Were the answers of his life, of his freedom, there in that distant and mystical place? A tinge of regret stung the young man. Perhaps he should have gone south with Kaedale and Callan when first they left Pride. Perhaps he should have been stronger in his convictions and more determined to follow his father's footsteps to learn at that wondrous book he so revered as a child. That wondrous tome that guided his life was the hint of something great, or if he, in his desperation, gave to it more promise than the actual truth of the Jester too. He glanced over at Dame Gwydra, at Queen Gwydra. Or was this his destiny? He silently replayed her promises in his head, her assurance that the gain would be worth the price. Branson fell into the magic of his brooch. The serpentine glow came up around him, and flames engulfed him, angry, furious, white-hot flames. He drew forth his sword, his mother's sword, and held it high. And then, with the magic of a Bellican Malachite lifting his body, the highwayman leaped from the ring. He landed on the field before the center square. A tremendous blast of flames rolling out from his feet. The highwayman rushed about, flames bursting from him, his sword stabbing with deadly precision, a terrified man after woman after man trying desperately to get out of his way. He aimed his sword along a line of archers moving between the center square and the one to the north. The highwayman bounded away to the north, leap after leap that ended each time in a devastating fireball. On one descent, he saw a spear set before him, but he could not sway, and so he impaled himself as he landed and blowing away all those around him. The highwayman leaped away immediately, trailing no blood, for as the spear had pierced his flesh, so too had it punctured the serpentine shield, and the hot flames had cauterized the wound as soon as the highwayman leaped back off the bloodied weapon. Up above, Dame Gwydra saw her moment and began her charge. Those leading formations evaporated, scores of men burning and dead on the western slope, dozens of archers thrashing in the death throes of killing lightning, scores more cut down by the fiery blade of the highwayman. That retreat did not halt at the next grouping of military squares, for with the fleeing soldiers came the highwayman himself, in full burning glory and power.
Stop him!
Milwellis turned to Gilb.
It is magic! Your magic! You stop him!
Harcourt grabbed Milwellis by the shoulder and shook him, and Milwellis looked back at the man with shock until he noted that Harcourt was pointing frantically ahead, for on came the highwayman in his terrible splendor.
Archers, form around me! Fill the air! Shoot him dead!
Up into the air the highwayman went, and only then did he see the great black volley swarming his way. He threw forth a fireball there in midair, the force of it deflecting many missiles aside and disintegrating many others. But some got through the conflagration, and Branson felt the iron tips and wooden shafts sliding into his body. He landed and leaped into a copse of trees, confused and with his line of Ki-Chi-Kree wavering, trying hard to fall fully into the Soul Stone and enact healing magic upon himself, Branson slammed hard into a tree trunk. He tried to fall more fully into the one stone that could save him, for now he felt most profoundly at all the serious wound from impaling himself. His gut was torn, his line of life energy shivering, breaking, the pain threatening his concentration. Bonnegran led his chariot group along the lines, pulling back his men, for the rout was in full now, with King Yezelnik fleeing the field. As his orders multiplied throughout the forces, warriors and commanders echoing the call for quarter, Bonnegran swung back to the east and lashed his team into a full gallop.
Relent! The day is won!
He heard Kieran Howen's legion, and it was strange indeed to hear these men of that eastern city cheering for him as he passed among their ranks. He pulled up fast before the three generals.
All quarter given.
You ask much. The day is won, and my men so long at war will have their revenge.
No, Laird. This is for Hans. All of it.
Kieran Howen and his two generals stared at Bonnegran as if he had reached over and slapped the Laird across the face.
Yezelnik is through. He cannot survive this day. It is time to heal the land of Hans.
Is this mighty and merciless Bonnegran I hear before me?
Perhaps it is Dame Guaidra, but it is right, and it is for the best, for what will follow this day.
You will be king, yes?
Bonnegran didn't flinch.
And Guaidra, your queen?
Again, the bear did not respond.
What for Ethelbert Dosento, then?
A shining and wondrous city on the Marianic coast, with the full support of Delaval, and Pride, and Vanguard, and the Order of the Blessed Abel.
My trusted generals and friends, do spread the word that all quarter is to be given, and tend the wounded of both sides.
Bonnegran walked his chariot beside Kieran Howen's horse, and held forth his hand.
I have not forgotten our alliance in the east against the Powrys.
Nor have I.
Kieran Howen took Bonnegran's hand. Branson held on tightly and concentrated on his soul stone, holding steady his life energy. He managed to glance about. He noted the carnage he had wrought this ugly day. He had killed hundreds and wounded thousands more.
The demon is dead, and now comes the witch in folly.
Branson couldn't see much of the battlefield through the pain and the tears and the smoke and the tumble of smoking leaves. But he quickly came to understand that Laird Milwellis had somehow held his remaining force together. He managed to glance back behind him toward the western slope, toward the army of Guaidra. Down the hill she came, he knew, and knew, too, that he had weakened Milwellis's line enough for her to drive hard through those first ranks. But as he swung his gaze back, Branson realized that it wouldn't be enough. Not hardly. For those thousands around Milwellis stood firm, and the Laird himself sat tall above them, forming them into a countercharge and heartening them with every word. Branson's shaking hand reached into his pouch, and he brought forth his fist, clutching a gem. The Soul Stone protested as he turned his focus, and he knew then that to relinquish his concentration from the healing magic was surely to die. He knew it, but he knew that Guaidra was doomed. The price. The game.
And now she is ours.
Laird Milwellis lifted his mailed fist before him in a punch of victory. Just as he started to shout the command to charge, Laird Milwellis felt his own fist, his own gauntlet, smash into his face with tremendous force. Through that gauntlet, and through his hand came a screeching projectile, crushing through bone, tearing through brain, and blowing the back of Milwellis's skull and helm away.
Laird! Father, tend him!
Harcourt looked at the monk, and his words failed. DeGilb sat on his horse behind Milwellis, a strange look in his eye. He looked down at his own chest, where blood widened under his brown robes and streamed out the hole made by the lodestone. He looked at Harcourt curiously.
I am dead.
In the tree, Branson could not see his handiwork, for his sight had turned inward. He pictured Kaydale, beautiful Kaydale, reaching down to him as he lay in the mud, the poor stork who had been bullied to the ground yet again. He felt her warmth, her kiss, her love. He felt the brush of her brown hair on his face, a gentle place to hide from the pain. He heard Gwydra's promise, and he knew, somehow he knew, that his sacrifice had not been in vain. He left the battlefield with hope. Yezelnik stared out from the high window of his keep beyond the walls of Delaval City to a field blackened by a great and combined army. He had less than 2 legions, no more, for in the rout many had died, many more had fled, and still more, so said the rumors, had turned against him, joining the ranks of the Bear of Haunts.
Milwellis.
He looked to the river, where an armada of his warships and those of Palmaris Town had gathered, but they remained far out in the river, out of range of Bonagrand's archers. He rubbed his face.
He will come. Harcourt will tell us.
Olam referred to the news that had come to Yezelnik's chambers only a few moments before, an announcement that General Harcourt of Palmaris Town, Laird Milwellis's second, had somehow managed to bypass Bonagrand and Gwydra's tens of thousands and enter Delaval City. He was quickly escorted into Yezelnik's chambers.
When will Milwellis attack?
Laird Milwellis is dead, and his army scattered before the rage of Dame Gwydra and some demon dactyl known as the Highwayman.
What? I lent you legions!
The carrion birds feast well in Blenden Co. The army was broken, and the battle ended, even before Laird Bonagrand arrived with thousands more to bolster Dame Gwydra's cause. And with the warriors of Ethelbert Dos Antil beside him to bolster the cause of both.
But surely you have something left. I see the armada in the river.
Crewed thinly, and by no force that might do battle with the Bear of Haunts.
But you got in here, so we can escape.
Laird Bonagrand, who has my sword in surrender, sent me in. He demands that you yield. Delaval City, all of Haunts is his, is King Bonagrand's. And Queen Gwydra's. Curse her name.
No! No, no, we must kill them! You must kill them!
All is lost.
Yezelnik sat as if frozen from many heartbeats, then finally leaped from his throne and rushed out of the room to the top of the long stair.
You cannot leave me! You cannot! I command that you kill them!
You do it! Strengthen your army! Hold strong the walls until they are gone, you feeble fool! You should have stayed on the field as your generals demanded to defeat Bonagrand out there!
While you fled!
I am your queen! You must protect me!
She hit him, but Yezelnik was having no more. He balled his fist and slugged Olam hard in the face. Then he grabbed her by the hair and tugged hard, sticking out not only a handful of strands, but a hairpin as well. He struck with it, stabbing it into Olam's chest again and again. She threw herself against him, but Yezelnik was glad that he had mortally wounded her. He realized that he couldn't support her great bulk against him, and that his heels were against the top step of a long staircase. Cormac and Milkayla had not marched that afternoon with Gwydra and Bonagrand back to Delaval City. As soon as the battle ended, Bonagran and Guaidra had swung about in pursuit of Yezelnik to be done with this all, but they left many behind to tend the wounded, to pile and burn the dead. So Cormac and Milkayla remained about Blenden Co., with so many wounded to tend and so many questions unanswered. It wasn't until 2 days later, the same morning that Harcourt arrived in Delaval City, that the pair at last discovered some credible witnesses who led them to a burned and scarred copse of trees. The couple made their way among the many trunks and roots and, of all the treasures that would be looted from the carnage of Blenden Co. in the aftermath of that battle, none shone more precious than the sword Milkayla found on the ground in the leaves beneath one tall maple. The woman paused a long while, steadying herself, before she dare looked up to the tree-born grave of the highwayman. With the death of Yezelnik, the gates of Delaval City opened that day as the sun sank low in the western sky as, in a field far away, Cormac and Milkayla knelt and cried and kissed the hero who won the day in Blenden Co. Harcourt of Palmaris Town met the royal procession at the gates as they marched. He presented King Yezelnik's sword to Laird Bonagran, nay, to King Bonagran. Bonagran took it and looked to Queen Guaidra at his side. Then he glanced at Master Riandu and at the Laird of Ethelbert following behind, who nodded his agreement. Bonagran accepted Yezelnik's sword, but in turn gave Harcourt back the sword the general had surrendered in Blenden Co. And in that moment of confusion and fear, there came to Delaval City hope. Unlike so many who left Blenden Co. traveling straight to Delaval City to attend the formal wedding and coronation of Bonagran and Guaidra, Cormac and Milkayla took a more roundabout route, moving north and west to the bank of the Mazer Delaval, not far south from Palmaris Town. It seemed a fool's chase, even to Cormac, who had insisted upon it, but he was determined to at least try. He owed his unlikely friends that much. Whether it was some magic in the powery beret he wore, or a matter of good information gleaned from some of Milwellis's soldiers, or simply dumb luck, or some combination of the three, McCormick did not know, but walking along the river, the monk recognized the familiar face immediately, though it was bloated in death and well along in rot. But he knew this dwarf without doubt.
"And Bicklebrin's up here! I cannot believe that we found them!"
Cormac stood, hands on hips, looking down at the Powry who had befriended him. The weight of the world fell on his shoulders in that one moment, and tears escaped his eyes. Tears for McGuigic and Bicklebrin. Tears for Branson. Tears for Jameston Sequin. Tears for all the dead, and all the maimed, and all the grieving.
"Bury them."
The monk shook his head. He drew a knife from his belt and crouched down over his dead Powry friend.
"Cormac!"
By the time the woman arrived at his side, he stood up and showed her McGuigic's heart. Methodically, the monk went to Bicklebrin and similarly cut out his heart.
"What are you doing?"
Cormac found a clear spot in from the river, a place suitable for his needs. He placed the hearts down gently and began to dig with his knife.
"Help me!"
"You bury their hearts?"
"And then we sing."
They finished the hole and placed the hearts of McGuigic and Bicklebrin within. Cormac tapped down the replaced earth, then grabbed Milkayla by the shoulders and bent low in a huddle. He began the cadence of the song he learned long ago in a cold, distant place, and Milkayla dutifully chanted along, though she did not know the words. It didn't matter, Cormac thought, for what did he know of this ritual anyway? Would two new dwarves, offspring of his friends, actually come forth?
"That is sepulchre?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"I don't know. A debt repaid?"
The couple stood holding hands above the graves, the womb of McGuigic and Bicklebrin, for a long, long while. And there, they put the past behind them and turned south toward Delaval City, toward the future. Branson Womack, Prince of Pride, cast his line into the still waters of the lake and rested back against the stone. This was his favorite fishing spot in all of Pride Town. A small outcrop that jutted into the water beside the old house, the childhood home of his father and namesake. From the window of that house, his father often watched his adoptive father, Garibald Womack, similarly casting. At least, so claimed his mother and grandmother, and Branson could well imagine it. He felt connected to this place, which, along with Castle Pride, had been his home for all his 35 years. Here, he was at peace. Here the world was as it should be in the kingdom known as Hans the Bear in God's year 111.
Father!
His teenage son, Denard, came into view, sprinting past the house toward Branson. On the porch, Callan McKeague stood up curiously, but old Dawson, well into his 90s now, hardly seemed to notice the disturbance.
Word from Ursel!
Denard referred to the throne of Hans the Bear, a city once known as Delaval. Branson knew what was coming before Denard even spoke it.
To the castle!
They found Kaydale, the longtime Dame of Pride, tending one of her many gardens. Her smile had not diminished with age, though the sparkle in her eyes had never quite returned after the loss of her beloved husband.
The king is dead.
Kaydale closed her eyes. Like Branson, she wasn't surprised by the news, for all in the kingdom who knew well the old Bear of Hans knew that he wouldn't long survive after the death of his wife, Queen Gwydra.
What now?
It is good that they had a child. Pride A will be king. He's a good man, I think.
You have not seen him in 11 years. Not since the Abelican Centennial.
He is near your age. You knew him best of all. Do you think me wrong?
Branson shrugged.
He's got his father's size, to be sure.
Aye, but has he his mother's good heart?
That was the rub, after all. For more than 3 decades, the land of Hans the Bear had known peace and prosperity. For one brief, shining moment, all the people of the land mattered, not the king and queen. And no lairds, not Dame Kaydale of Pride, nor any of the many lairds of Entel in the east, or any of the many lairds of the lesser holdings, had hoarded their treasures while the peasants suffered. For that was not the way of King Bonagran and Queen Gwydra's Hans. And only once in all the years had an upstart laird in Palmaris Town defied them. And even there, in the city that once blamed Dame Gwydra for the murderous attacks of Powrys, the garrison and peasants of Palmaris Town had refused to fight for the treasonous laird when Queen Gwydra and her fleet arrived. But that was all of a different age now, as the reign of Gwydra and Bonagran had come to an end.
Pride will be his mother's fine son, or I will become my father's son and put to use my grandmother's shining sword.
Don't talk like that, boy.
Hush, mother. No, do. If the world ever is in need of you, then answer that call.
Branson, son of the highwayman, nodded. And though he believed his prediction about the reign of King Pride, so too did he believe his claim about his own determination. For he was his father's son and his mother's, and he would fight if ever the need arose, as long as the price was worth the gain. At St. Mirabel, Father Abbot Riandu, the leader of the Church of Blessed Abel, received the news of Bonagran's passing with great sadness. He had known the king longer than any man alive and had witnessed the great growth of the Laird of Pride in the months leading up to his ascension to the unified throne. Hans the Bear would not easily recover from the loss of Queen Gwydra and King Bonagran so close together, and his own role in assuring that the light of their reign did not darken in the coming days would not be a minor one. Riandu had been in Ursel when Queen Gwydra died, passing peacefully among loved ones and dear friends. Riandu stared out his window in the same office that once belonged to Father Primujan and Father Arto Levin before him, and let the tapestry of his life play out before him. He thought of Kaydale and of Branson, the highwayman, the little stork, a damaged child living in a hole and carrying chamber pots, who so unexpectedly came into Riandu's life and so unbelievably came to play the most important of roles in the great struggle of his day. A moment of regret brought a wince to the Father Abbot, but it passed quickly. They accomplished great things. They made the world a better place, and, in the end, it could not be denied, in cottages across the length and breadth of Hans the Bear, that the price had been worth the gain.
And so our work goes on.
Master Pinauer nodded solemnly.
It ever will, Father. It ever will.
The Saga of the First King, Book 4, The Bear, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2010 by R.A. Salvatore. Published by arrangement with St. Martin's Press Macmillan. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012 by The Cutting Corporation, Incorporated. All rights reserved. With performances by Bradley Smith, Evan Casey, Gary Tells, Daniel Sontag, Yasmin Twazan, Christopher Graybill, Scott McCormick, Christopher Sheeran, Joe Brack, Mort Shelby, Stephen Carpenter, David Coyne, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Karen Novak, MJ Casey, Ken Jackson, Colleen Delaney, Thomas Keegan, Nick DePinto, Nanette Savard, Kimberly Gilbert, Alyssa Wilmoth, Johan Detweiler, Patrick Bussink, Eric Messner, and Thomas Penny. Adapted and directed by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. Featuring original music composed and performed by Dan Smith and Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed the Saga of the First King, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Saga, John Sprunk's Shadow Saga, and Brent Weeks' The Lightbringer Trilogy. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio.
Don't think I give a damn that you're my father.
The thought never crossed my mind.
I don't know you, and I don't want to know you. All you ever gave me was a rep to live up to. I done it too. Maybe I haven't killed as many men as the famous Frank Morgan, but my day's coming, old man. My day's coming.
Can Frank Morgan gun down his own flesh and blood? Find out in The Last Gunfighter number 23, Montana Gundown. Available now in graphic audio. Smoke Jensen's wife is shot. He will carve a bloody path through all of Colorado, leading straight to the heart of the villain. If you think you know violence, you ain't seen nothing yet. Don't miss The Visceral Revenge in The Mountain Man number 39. Assault of the Mountain Man. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.